Welcome to Hacks and Jacks. It's April 20th, Easter Sunday on a beautiful baseball Sunday. Scott, how was your holiday weekend and how was your baseball weekend?
It was busy. It was good. Saturday, I thought I was going to be able to go. When I bought the tickets, I thought it'd be Scooble. It wasn't Scooble. It was Casey Mize. Threw a nice game. Got to see a torque bomb. Get torque, nerds. Love it. Torque's still rolling, baby. We'll talk about it. We'll get to there. But no, it was good. And then just had, you know, Easter with the family. A good excuse for somebody in the family to make a big ham and give me a bunch of dessert and candy. So I'm doing good. How was yours?
It was good. We've got, you know, three young kids that all were hopped up on sugar and candy and treats and ran around the house and then ran around the grandparents' house and then ran around our house some more and then crashed and got cranky and went to bed. So it was a good holiday. No, it was a good holiday weekend. Other than the Orioles getting pounded 24-2 by the Cincinnati Reds today, everything went really well.
Yeah. The Reds will do that once in a while.
Yeah, Cincinnati offenses in Baltimore just seem to always go off regardless of the sport.
Sundays are weird, man, because this is mildly fantasy relevant, really, but Sundays are weird days. Teams are often, maybe they're at the end of a long road trip. Maybe they're at the end of a long homestand, whatever it is. Different lineups go out there. Teams are like a lot of aces just seem to go on Fridays. It's not always true, but teams do weird stuff. On Sundays, it's a great day to stream, even though the Orioles pitching got lit up. It's a good day to stream because a lot of times that's when veterans get off days. You know, they sit on Sundays. But yeah, Sundays are weird baseball, man. A lot of day games, a lot of weird stuff happens.
TK421 letting me know that the Orioles pitching is fine. Yeah, signing Charlie Morton to a 1-year, $15 million contract to stabilize the rotation has really looked good so far. But enough about the Orioles pitching. Let's get to Hacks and Jacks. News and notes for this week. Let's talk injuries and transactions. A handful of guys entering this week on the IL and a handful more hitters heading back to the IL as well. It's adding to the injured list. Miami outfielder Griffin Conine, Philadelphia outfielder Brandon Marsh, Colorado shortstop Ezekiel Tovar, Boston catcher Connor Wong, and Cincinnati first baseman Christian Encarnacion Strand all going on the IL. And then there's a couple other bats that we're not so sure about, might head to the IL, might just miss a couple games. That's New York Yankees designated hitter Ben Rice. And then if you were watching Sunday Night Baseball, Luis Arraez collided at first base with Mauricio Dubon and might miss some time as well, Scott. Of those bats, you know, other than Rice and Arraez, is there anybody else who might be relevant from a fantasy standpoint missing time?
You know, I want to talk for just a brief second about Ezekiel Tovar because he was on a lot of bust lists coming in, and I get it, right? A 3.3% walk rate last year, 28.8% strikeout rate. Those are not numbers you love. He plays on a really bad Rockies team. There's a lot of reasons to be down on him. And coming into the season, you know, starting out his first 16 games, 70 plate appearances, he's hitting .212, slugging .303. Not great, right? And I get it. And now he's on the IL. You're going to be tempted to cut him. And look, in shallow leagues, the 10 teamers, your IL's already full. I get it. I just want you to keep paying attention to him because all the reasons that people didn't like him coming into this season was that he struck out too much and he didn't hit the ball very hard. He hit it okay, but not very hard. And he's doing those things, right? Like he set a career high in max exit velocity already this season not by much, but it means something. 111.1. His average exit velocity, small sample, but 91.2. That's, about 2.5 ticks above where he'd been before. He didn't have a ton of barrels yet, but a 34% or a 43% hard hit rate. He's like doing the stuff that people want him to do. And the strikeout rate's down 10%. It's down to 18. It's not even at 20% right now. That player, that version of Ezekiel Tovar that shaves 10% off his strikeout rate is a guy who can absolutely repeat what he did last year, right? In terms of like the batting average, the .269 batting average, the runs and RBI, he can do all that stuff with an 18% strikeout rate. Can't do it again with 28, but he could do it again with 18. And that's what he was doing. It was a really interesting development. It stinks that the rest of the results weren't coming in yet, but man, give it time. I think it was going to get there. So just keep an eye on him. He'll probably, if you did cut him already, he'll probably stay out there for a while. The numbers were terrible, but just keep an eye on Tovar as he's on the IL. Hopefully, you know, he shouldn't be out terribly long. It's a bruise to his hip. If you end up getting thin in the middle infield, you're going to be tempted to just search by who's been the best for the last 2 weeks, but keep an eye on Tovar. I think this is a player that really does have skill. It's not like he was a nobody prospect. He can do some things, and he plays for the Rockies. So you know that at least at home, he has a chance to rake. So yeah, Ezekiel Tovar hitting the IL, but worth keeping an eye on. And he may be hitting your wires here pretty soon.
Yeah, we got a comment from YouTube from Uncle Ted with Ben Rice missing time and potentially going to the IL. If he does get sent to the injured list, is Trent Grisham a name that we should maybe keep an eye on? He led off today with Rice out, and he's hit, I think, 5 home runs now after today's action in limited at bats. What do we think about Trent Grisham?
You know, there was a time when we were very excited about Trent Grisham, really like sort of in his rookie year. And when after he got moved to San Diego, he was a guy that's like, oh yeah, there's 20-20 upside with this guy. He takes walks. He struck out a little too much, but the batting average was always just awful. Right. And it's not like his barrel rates were particularly bad. He hits the ball right. He hits a lot of fly balls. And it's helpful, you know, being in New York, that is helpful for him. Being a lefty who hits a lot of fly balls, they have a chance to get out, but it also means his BABIP's always going to stink, because here's the thing about fly balls. Unless they leave the yard, they are probably outs, right? Like much more so even than ground balls, which is interesting, right? People that go ground ball, that's the worst kind. It is because the upside of a ground ball is a single, unless you're really, really fast, and then maybe a double, as long as no one else was already on first, right? Like that's it. That's your cap. Whereas a fly ball obviously could be a home run, but if it's not, it's not going to be very good. So with Trent Grisham, I like that the strikeout rate is down, right? I'm into that. It's not a big, again, it's not quite a big sample. It's 52 plate appearances, about as low as it gets for really wanting to track strikeout rate. And that's good. I think, I mean, he had the one home run. He also struck out 3 times. So I don't know how often the Yankees are going to want to lead him off. I do think it was interesting they did it today, and they get a mixed bag with it, right? Hit a home run, struck out 3 times, did not walk. So I do think, like, if you have a wide open spot in your outfield, I don't hate the stream. I don't think he's going to play every day. I don't think he's going to lead off consistently, but if you want to play that, like you've got a deep bench, where, you know, your league allows you to have a deep enough bench where you've always got 3 or 4 hitters on it. There are worse plays to make. It's hard to get too excited though, when you have such a long track record of not being good. And, you know, Uncle Ted pointing out, making these adjustments, I do want to touch on adjustments, because it's really interesting. We only hear about these adjustments when a guy is hot, right? You never hear about these adjustments when he's been hot for a while. You don't hear about more adjustments. You don't hear about adjustments when they start to slump. All you hear is that, oh yeah, this is happening. And then like, oh, and guess what? He made an adjustment. These adjustments don't last. Like, even if they last forever, the results don't. Because if all it took was fixing up a stance a little bit, or, you know, fixing a leg kick for permanent success, we'd have a lot of guys who are really, really good. The problem is that as you hit well, pitchers look for new ways to attack you. Right? They test you more. When they aren't worried about you, they don't scout you the same, right? The pitcher doesn't remember the exact game plan against, like, oh, Trent Grisham batting at the bottom of the order. I've got too many other things to worry about. Kyren Paris is a good example of this, right? After he starts hitting home runs, people start paying attention. They look for where the holes in the swing are, right? And when a dude has like a 30 grade hitting, it's one of those things where it's like, someone knows where these holes are. And that's what they do. They go and attack it. And what has to happen after that, what tells us the most about a player, a hitter particularly, is when that slump happens, how quick do they break out and how deep does the slump get, right? I mean, there's sort of the same thing, but, and third, how high does the rebound go, right? So like when we've been talking about Ben Rice, and I hope he's healthy, I think he's having a really exciting season, but we've seen Ben Rice do this before. The difference is after he slumped, he wasn't really able to bring it back. Some of the StatCast data was good and some of it may have been bad luck, but we didn't really see the adjustment come back, and it took quite a long time. It took too long, actually, and the Yankees stopped giving him every day at bats. So that's what we need to see. With Trent Grisham, I think it's cool what he's doing. I worry that as pitchers adjust, they go back to all the ways they've attacked him in the past, and those things were wildly successful. Pitchers have been very good at shutting down Trent Grisham. His, like, you know, the most home runs he ever hit in a season was 17 back when he was with the Padres. He probably has a little bit more of a ceiling than that in a Yankees uniform. Let's say he played the whole season. I do think, especially with a 5 home run head start, let's say he played every day from now to the end of the season, he could hit like 22 to 24 home runs. The problem is that I think the batting average would really come back down to earth, and that's a problem. So that batting average would probably come back down to like 220, 230 rest of the way, maybe more. And that's therein lies the problem, because the Yankees probably aren't going to keep giving one of their hitting spots to a guy who hits like that. So I think he's best deployed as this, you know, situational guy against right-handed pitching. And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they pull him. He's a decent defender, so he doesn't necessarily get pulled all the time, but it's hard to get too excited about a guy who we've seen a lot of. And even if he's made an adjustment, I have to see it from a guy like him with such a long track record of no success, right? If it was just one bad year, I'd be in faster. But with multiple seasons of being at best a fringe fantasy name, even in deep leagues, it's hard to get too excited yet.
We'll take a quick break and get back to some better news with guys who have come back from the IL. We're back with Hacks and Jacks. It's Scott Chu and Brett Ford here, and we're talking guys who have returned from the IL in the past couple of weeks, and there's a lot of exciting names on this list for fantasy managers to get back in their lineups and be happy about. We'll start off with first baseman from the Los Angeles Dodgers, Freddie Freeman, finally back, getting a start to his season, ranked 19th in your list, Scott, and sure you're going to stay relatively high on him even after the injury.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, he's going to be banged up. He's 35. He was banged up in the playoffs last year. He still performed. He's a solid veteran hitter. Look, the ceiling, I think, is coming down, right? The ceiling is not going to be what it was, you know, even 2 or 3 years ago. I think some of that is fading, but the floor is so high for Freddie Freeman. He's finished as a top one or two first baseman, like basically every year, except for last year where he still finished like as a top five first baseman or something like that. The floor is just so high that he's going to stay ranked fairly high. I know there's some concern that he's going to rest more, things like that. I'll note that since he came back, which was Friday, April 11th, he's played all but one game, right? I'm fine with that, right? Like that's totally cool with me. Sitting less than once a week, even once a week, doesn't bother me a ton. It's when you start sitting more than that, that I have to start being concerned.
Well, we'll head down south where Texas outfielder Wyatt Lankford came back from injury on Sunday. He played for the Rangers in Sunday's action against the Dodgers. Before he went to the IL, he was ranked 36th on your list. Where do you anticipate having him next week for your next iteration of the list?
Pretty much back right where he was. I do that a lot, especially early in the season. Unless I have some reason to believe this thing's going to linger, I try to avoid just automatically assuming that a guy's injury is going to linger just because of like where it is. Like, it is an oblique thing, and it's very easy to be very afraid about oblique things. But for now, I'm going to wait. We saw him. He got caught once today, but he also stole a base. Things look okay. I like the plate discipline. I think the batting average will get a little better. The BABIP's low. It's going to come back. He's hitting the ball hard. Wyatt Lankford, I think this last year was a good season eventually. Like, he had a breakout half. I think this year, you know, again, what we're hoping for is the full breakout season.
We'll head to Detroit, where second baseman Gleyber Torres has made a comeback. He's back in the lineup, leading off for the Tigers. 112 on your list this week. How do you feel about Gleyber?
Look, he's boring. I get that. The home run upside in Detroit is not great. It's a big park, especially to center field. You know, it's just there, and it just reminds you every time you're there, like, man, that is a deep, deep ballpark. It's not a terrible park for hitting in general because it's got big power alleys, and the batter's eye is amazing because they've got this just like big, like sort of IV-ish backdrop behind the pitcher. So it's really easy to pick up that white ball against that dark backdrop. So it's good for that. Not that Gleyber Torres ever had a problem really picking up the ball, but he is a solid middle. He's just above the replacement level. Right. And in some leagues, like some of these 10 and 12 teamers where you don't have the middle infield, he may be below the replacement level. And what he actually gives me an opportunity to talk to you about is the replacement level. So I do this hitter list, right? I do my top 150 hitters, and it exists in this vacuum that's not real, right? There is no vacuum. Play has started. You have needs now, right? Your league has done things. You are no longer in a vacuum. You stopped being in a vacuum after about the first round of the draft. The list lives in this weird place. So one of the most important things to do on the list when you're using it is to find the replacement level, which, to put very, very generally, find the first tier where there's a couple of guys on your wire. So you're going to get to a tier and you say, hey, a couple of these guys are on my wire, right? That's where the replacement level starts. And once you're there, the rankings are a good guide. But if you've got a gut feeling on one player over the other and you're after your replacement level, you don't have to worry so much about how far I rank them apart, right? Because other guys of that caliber are going to be available if this pick doesn't work out. So you get to, that's where you take your risks, right? When you're already at the replacement level, the guy you're dropping is, you know, you're like, oh, well, I don't really think he's better than that replacement level. You can just start burning and churning. And that's really where positional streaming comes in, right? We don't just stream pitchers. We stream hitters too. So sometimes you're streaming them for a specific category. Like, hey, I need speed. So I'm going to stream against certain batteries. I'm going to stream in other places. Or you're going to say, I need a spark. Like, I need just some production across the board. My team's being a little sluggish. Just burn and churn through that replacement level till you find something that hits. That the list might help you find some of those guys. And it's going to be a mix of like, hey, here's some high floor guys. Here's some high ceiling guys with really, really low floors. It's going to depend. So not every guy I rank above another is going to be like, oh yeah, that's the rank for your team. Cause the rank, I don't make ranks for your team specifically, right? I make them in general. So for your team, it might be different because you might have a bigger need at middle infield, or you know that your league super hunts prospects. So you have to bump them up your board if you want a chance, right? I don't love that approach just because your league mates do it. But if that's something you want to be into, you can move around, but find the replacement level first. Gleyber Torres, for a lot of folks in 10 and 12 teamers, is at that replacement level sort of stage.
Well, you talk about that replacement level. There's another guy who came back from the IL this week who is right there with Gleyber Torres, different position. And that's Josh Young at third base for the Texas Rangers. Where do you kind of feel about him at that third base where there's maybe a little bit more depth, especially at the top end?
So he's a problem in that it's a very low floor, high ceiling kind of play. And it's really going to push on your patience. So with Young, we've seen the strikeout rates just get untenable at times. It pushes him down the order. Like, he's not, the strikeouts have been okay to start the season. They're not like outrageous. He did strike out twice today. You're hoping that you can get these home runs, and he's got this ability to hit a boatload of home runs, but because he's so up and down, it's a classic power hitter trope. So especially power hitters who don't walk a lot, right? And Josh Young does not walk a lot. They are the type. So Anthony Santander can be like this if you want to talk about like a higher level player who has this sort of trope, but you don't strike out a ton, or you strike out a bit, like, you know, usually less than 30%. Otherwise, you're probably not playing much, but high strikeout rate, very low walk rate. You're going to be really streaky because you're just that sort of hitter. It probably means you're very aggressive. It means you're attacking a lot of pitches and you can get fooled a lot, right? Because you got to guess. And, you know, as TK421 mentions, Connor Norby. It's a Nolan Gorman problem with Connor Norby. It's these guys that just have too much swing and miss in their game. So one of the stats I recommend you look for in a player like Young, just to get an idea of like, does this guy have a chance to make more contact? Look at the zone contact rate. The magic number, 80%. You got to be able to hit 4 out of the 5 pitches in the zone you swing at. If you can't, that is going to be a problem long term. Connor Norby has not done that. In fact, he hasn't been very close to that. right? He's usually sitting around like 75, 76%. That's a problem because even if he starts making the right choices and stops swinging at certain pitches in the zone that just aren't very valuable, he's still going to miss. He's going to miss all the time. He can pull back the aggression, but it won't stop the strikeouts because he just misses a lot. Josh Jung does not have this problem. He does keep that number up above 80%. He has other problems, right? Like he chases too much. He makes too much bad contact on stuff outside of the zone, stuff he shouldn't have been swinging at the first place. And then when he hits it, it doesn't really have anywhere to go. But pitchers attack him a lot in the zone. Over 50% of the time he sees pitchers in the zone and he's pretty good at making contact with them. So he's got a decision-making problem. And those are the types of ones that can get better with time. But it does take time for that to happen. I'm going to be patient with him for a little while because the ceiling is pretty high. It's probably like a 25, 30 home run bat who can actually hit for average because he is good at making contact. The OBP will never be good because he doesn't walk. But Josh Jung is a guy that probably worth holding on to if you can. But again, it's all about the replacement level in your league, right? Like I asked this in the AMA. I asked this in the comments on the hitter list. It's always, they say, should I drop Josh Jung? And I say, for who, right? For who? You know, other folks at Pitcher List have pointed this out. You know, in a lot of sense, what you do is actually trade with the waiver wire. The only nice thing about the wire is they always say yes, right? So if you put it in that context for yourself, you never just say, should I trade Josh Jung? Because you would say, I will trade Josh Jung for somebody, right? So that's the way to think about it. And he's an upside play. So again, if you can stomach it, keep doing it. But just know it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Well, you talk about upside, and one of the biggest upside pieces coming off the IL this week is Zach Neto, the shortstop out in Los Angeles, or Anaheim, if you will, the Angels shortstop. Neto came back and has hit a home run. He's done some good things. Where do you think he'll fall in your list next week?
We'll definitely be inside the top 100. What is driving me absolutely bonkers is that they're batting him seventh. And this was my problem with Neto last year. I want to rank him higher. He should be batting second, right? Like Luis Rengifo has not been great this season. Just put Zach Neto up there. He's got a ton of upside as a hitter. He can steal. He can do a lot of things for them. Just put him up there, guys. Like, what have you got to lose? 24-year-old shortstop, put him up there. This is part of the future of your team, assuming you have a future as a team. This is where it is. He hit a home run today. He can do a lot of things. He doesn't strike out a ton. He went 23 home runs, 30 stolen bases last year. Just let him bat second. Let him bat second.
We'll be back right after this with some names that have been sent up and or called up rather and sent down from Major League roster. Some exciting prospects to talk about when we get back. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. It's Scott Chu here with Brett Ford. Scott, let's talk about some prospects. Matt Shaw got sent down to AAA by the Chicago Cubs after a relatively slow start. How does that impact fantasy managers here in the short term?
It's a bummer. Matt Shaw is an interesting prospect, a guy who can go 20-20. But, you know, I know a lot came out about that weird swing he has. He's like super far up in the boxes. It's like, he's like, it's really bizarre what he does and the way he does it. And that's not necessarily the problem long-term, but what he does have, even in the minor leagues, is a quality of contact problem. He does not hit the ball very hard ever. He can get some home runs because you don't actually have to hit the ball that hard to hit a home run, right? Hit it about 340 feet, which is far for like me and you, but for a major leaguer, most major leaguers can hit a ball 340 feet if they really try. And 340 feet down the line is pretty much always a home run. So you can do that. Now, not everyone's going to go all Isak Paredes with it and do it every single time, but that's the path for him to get to like closer to 20 home runs. Whether it's down the pull side or, you know, the oppo way, there's a way to do it. He's not a player you need to hold in redrafts because we just don't know how long it'll take before he gets called back up. The Cubs don't have a lot of options for third base. Like right now they're rolling with Vidal Brujan and John Birdie, who are fast, but like you don't need to be that fast to play third base. Like it's a skill. They got a weird skill set to be playing third. It's just that I think they can do it sort of. So they do need a third baseman and it's not going to be these two guys they've got. they really probably want it to be Matt Shaw, although they may make a call to Kevin Alcantara or somebody. Oh, well, sorry, Kevin Alcantara is an outfielder, but they've got to make a call to somebody. They've got like this guy, Ben Cowles. He's not great. They don't have a ton of options at third base. They really need it to be Matt Shaw. That's the point I'm trying to make. Forget about me forgetting what position that the prospects play. The important thing is that Matt Shaw needs to be their third baseman. They don't really have a lot of other options because it ain't going to be Justin Turner. So he's going to come back up, but you don't need to wait and redraft it because this quality of contact problem can take a while to figure out. It's one thing when a guy is making bad swing decisions because that's purely mental, right? That's all I should swing now. It's pitch recognition. It's things that you can fix with, you know, just by watching, just by in your head. Quality of contact is a much more physical skill, and that can be a lot harder to adjust with. It's one thing to just make contact. It's another when you can make contact. Matt Shaw didn't look overwhelmed. It's not like he was striking out in buckets, right? His issue, I mean, he struck out like 26% of the time, but that's fine. He walked 14.7% of the time. He seemed to be seeing the plate okay. It's just that when he hit it, it didn't matter, right? He almost never hit it hard. He almost never, like, his exit velocity was 82.7 on those 40 batted ball events. That's horrid, right? That's really bad. You cannot be a major leaguer like that. So they're going to have to send him back down to AAA to just try to figure that out. How can he put just better wood on the ball? That's what brings him back.
Well, one of the most hyped prospects in the draft season gets sent down to AAA. And meanwhile, a large handful of prospects get called up. I'm going to read off a long list of guys who have made their major league debut over the last couple of weeks. And you can kind of cherry pick which ones you want to talk about and which ones might have some fantasy impact going forward. So here's the list. We got Chicago White Sox infielder Chase Mydroth, Pittsburgh catcher Henry Davis, Cincinnati infielder Noel V. Marte, San Diego outfielder Oscar Gonzalez, Minnesota shortstop Brooks Lee, Minnesota utility guy Luke Keyshaw, Milwaukee infielder Caleb Durbin, Miami infielder Ronnie Simone, Colorado infielder Adiel Amador, Tampa Bay outfielder Chandler Simpson, and just called up a few hours before recording, Miami catcher Augustin Ramirez. Scott, any of those guys really getting you excited for fantasy purposes?
A couple. Let's start with the ones that don't in shallower leagues. So that's going to be like Chase Mydroth, Caleb Durbin, this weird little wave of like a poor man's Luis Arraez style player, which are these slap hitters who don't bring a ton of speed. They don't bring a ton of power. They just bring this contact ability, right? And on one hand, we all know a player who has lived like this, right? Just makes a ton of contact, never strikes out. It's Luis Arraez. And we've seen other versions of it with limited success. You know, at times, like Jeff McNeil was always another one. There are guys that can live with these really, Yandy Diaz, another guy that lives with this really low strikeout rate. But it is very hard to do this. Right, there's a lot of guys who can do this in the minor leagues. It becomes different in the majors because pitchers can beat you in more ways. You will see guys, usually the problem is like guys that are, you know, we see the other end of this where these guys are like very aggressive slap hitters. Durbin, Mydroth, really aggressive. They slap the ball around and they just try to get on base that way. And then we see the other end of the spectrum, which is Edouard Julien, for example, who in the minors just walks all the time, strikes out quite a bit, but just super, super patient, waits for their pitch. They both have the same problem at the major league, is that, and it's that you can't just hunt fastballs and expect to live, right? Too many pitchers have too many ways to beat you. So it can take a bit for this kind of player. Sometimes they just, that ability they have is just so good, they just bring it and go. Nico Horner was pretty good kind of right out the gate, but he also had speed, so it mattered more for fantasy. You have to remember that when you only are bringing batting average to the table, unless your team's going to lead you off consistently, that average is not that useful, right? A hit is valuable in fantasy for the batting average part of it, but it'd be a lot more valuable if it had a chance to bring a run or an RBI with it, right? And these guys don't necessarily do that. Durbin, Durbin and Mydroth, like either, you know, you're Mydroth and you're on the White Sox who don't score very many runs, or you're Durbin and you might be hitting at the bottom of that order. It's not very exciting. It's hard to recommend them outside of like maybe deeper points leagues, because a hit is worth a point, right? Or whatever your scoring scale is, it's worth something. In our category leagues, it's just not worth that much. So that's something to keep in mind there. Now, to talk about slap hitters, we'll talk about Chandler Simpson over in Tampa Bay. He's the interesting one, right? Because yes, he slaps the ball around a ton, never strikes out, walks just a little bit. And he stole famously 104 bases in the minor leagues last year. Stole 94 bases the year before that. Now, would he steal 100 bases in the major leagues? Probably not quite. Batteries are a lot better in the major leagues, even with like the rule changes being sort of similar now. So like we used to talk a lot about this tax, where when you went from the minor leagues to the major leagues, you had to take a bunch of stolen bases off because the bags were different. The batteries are different. Now it's just the batteries, but we've got two problems with Chandler Simpson. Number one, that hitting skill set is hard to bring over, right? It is just like we talked about with Matt Shaw. It is really hard to live in the major leagues when you know, even in the minors, his exit velocity was under 85 miles an hour on average. It's really hard to do that with any kind of consistency. You need a lot of line drives. Now, that's something he's done in the majors. He's hit a couple line drives in the majors. He had a lot of them in the minors. It's possible, right? He does a lot of stuff the opposite way. You know, he's trying a lot. You know, as a left-hander, he tries to hit it down like the third baseline if he can and just run, right? Like, he's trying to turn ground balls into doubles. That's something Chandler Simpson can do. And so if you want stolen bases, it's worth a shot. Now, if you are in a head-to-head categories league, stolen bases are not quite so valuable because it's a super fluky stat. You can win it sometimes without like sacrificing a whole roster spot to get him. The other problem is that he's a Ray, and the Rays do weird stuff, and they platoon guys all the time. Like, they called him up to bench him, right? Like, why? I don't know why they called him up like that particular day. They could have just waited, right? It didn't seem like they had any intention of using him. They let him bat first on Saturday. He batted ninth today against a lefty. Interesting that he was in the lineup. So was Jonathan Aranda, which is a bit more interesting. It's something to think about. I'm really curious if Chandler Simpson can keep hitting line drives in the majors. That's the number to look for. He needs to consistently hit about 25% line drives and get that ball over the head of the infielders to make this work, because the defense is way, way better in the major leagues. The batteries are better at picking off, you know, stolen bases. The pitching's a lot better. It's going to be very difficult to bring what he does to the majors. Now, again, the upside's enormous. We're talking probably the only guy with any real chance of beating Ellie De La Cruz in stolen bases, right? But he's going to need to play a lot to do it, and he's going to need to hit a ton of line drives.
Yeah, and they have Johnny DeLuca right now on the IL. As soon as he comes back, we could see Simpson either sent back down or maybe just see him platoon in a way that, you know, the Rays love to do.
And Josh Lowe. So this is what's kind of annoying, is they already had a problem getting everybody in, right? Like, they already struggled to get all the guys in that they wanted to get in. And they've shown that they don't care how high their prospects are rated, they will sit them, right? Curtis Meade was a top 25 prospect at one time, and they started benching him immediately after they called him up, right? Jonathan Aranda is fine, is like hitting, so he's been in against the last two lefties, which is interesting, but it's because he's absolutely ripping the cover off the ball. Like, they just don't play that many guys every day. It's like, it's really just right now, like Mangum, who is deserving of this spot and is actually probably the one I'd go to first if you need anything more than just steals, because Mangum can run and he can hit a little bit. He's kind of a weird hitter himself, but he brings a bit more to the table as a hitter than Chandler Simpson does. But obviously he doesn't run the same. It's a very crowded lineup. It's only going to get more crowded as some of these guys come off the IL. Palacios is also down there. I don't know what they'll do with him either. It's going to be a lot. Now, all those guys like have options, even though they're older. So like, you could do it for some of them maybe, but it's a good problem to have for a real team, a tough one for fantasy managers. It's going to be hard to play around. If a guy's hitting really good, he'll probably stay in the lineup. But again, you've got to be doing what Jonathan Aranda has been doing to start seeing time against same-sided pitching.
Well, before we dive into Aranda, I do want to touch on Aranda more later in the episode. But let's talk about a couple more prospects. I'm interested to hear your take on Luke Keyshaw in Minnesota, and then a couple of catcher prospects. We talked about Agustin Ramirez, who got called up just recently, like earlier today, as well as Edgar Quiro in Chicago with the White Sox, both kind of bat-first catchers that might be fantasy relevant as well.
Yeah, Keyshaw, I've liked him as a lot as a prospect. I have him in the few dynasty leagues that I'm in as sort of this, he's kind of this all-around guy. He doesn't field particularly well at any position. That's like the really only tough thing about seeing where he's going to play. Right now he's been DHing, right? Willie Castro has been hurt, so that's opened up a little bit of room in this infield. They've had, you know, they've been playing Julianne, but you know that they're not necessarily married to Julianne as their second baseman. So that's maybe where the opening is for Keyshaw, but you know, and there's some room at DH. You know, he's right-handed, so he'll at least see time against lefties, but it's nice to see him be in the DH spot against two righties. I think there's some upside here. Again, he's more of like a do-it-all kind of guy who maybe in a full season is more like a 2020 hitter with a 250, 260 average, depending. You know, I don't know if he'd get there right away, but that's kind of the player that we're looking at, which, again, very good player. I think, you know, he'll take plenty of walks. The strikeout shouldn't be too bad. It's a very high floor. I don't know the ceiling is super high, but the floor is quite high. So that's the type of player you're getting with Keyshaw, just this high floor, but 2020 sort of hitter. Something that's interesting as far as the catchers go, Agustin Ramirez is the one. I was actually kind of in on him. I was hoping he'd win that job right out of camp, because you know, who else is going to catch for them, right? Like it's Liam Hicks right now, like whatever. Rob Brantley, you know, at 30, almost 36 years old. He's like the oldest guy on this team by like almost a decade in terms of, the hitting squad. It's a weird sort of dynamic there. Like it feels like he's there to supervise. Like he's just a lot older than all of his teammates. But Agustin Ramirez is this big power hitting catcher. We've seen a couple of these guys come up. It takes a little while sometimes, right? It took Shea Langeliers a while to become something. We're still kind of waiting on Francisco Alvarez, who is probably the highest touted of all of these guys. But it can happen. It does take a while for catchers. But he's someone who, again, out the gate, if you've been streaming catchers, he's certainly someone interesting, right? A little bit better in OBP leagues because he walks, but his OBP won't be good. I don't think his ratios will be very good at all in the majors. That's where to start with catchers, but like not that much worse than a streaming catcher. He does have plenty of pop. Like, you know, he hit 25 home runs in the minor leagues last year. I think he could hit a similar number to that in the majors. He's got that kind of, you know, that kind of power. You know, he's capable of barreling the ball up pretty well. You know, he can hit the ball hard fairly consistently. I'm very interested in him. But again, it's really to me more about, you know, do you need a streaming catcher? Because again, in any single catcher league, rostering more than one catcher is extremely difficult unless they're both like potentially top 5-6 catchers and good enough to earn a spot in your utility spot once in a while, right? Otherwise, you just can't do it. So he'll be interesting to those who are streaming their catchers. Now, for the White Sox, I'm not convinced the White Sox can develop any hitters at all. It's the Luis Robert Jr. problem. He's the same exact guy he was when he came up. He's not really made a single adjustment. Same for Andrew Vaughn. They're the same guy as when they came up. We haven't seen them take any steps forward. It's a problem. Like Luis Robert Jr., I keep saying he's the hardest guy on the entire list to rank because he's full of talent and it's just locked away in this White Sox lineup. I really would like to see him get moved. Like the Astros could use him, right? Like there's plenty of teams who've shown they can develop a hitter that could use him. The White Sox just haven't really developed anyone. So, you know, they call up Edgar Quiro, who is an interesting prospect like in and of himself, but it stinks that he's a White Sox. Because I don't know that I see it. Could he be a guy who hits like 15 to 20 home runs, which is very good for a catcher? Like if he played like a full season, like just was like an almost everyday catcher, like 120 game guy. Yeah, he could. I don't think the White Sox will give him that kind of opportunity. So he's really more of like a second catcher in two catcher leagues for me. Edgar Cuero is trying to remember to say their names again, because I talk a lot. So try my best. Keep me honest with it. But yeah, Edgar Cuero, maybe probably more of a second catcher.
Excellent. Well, that kind of wraps up our prospect talk. We'll get back with a little bit of Scott's top 150 hitters list, the most recent update coming out this past week after this break. We're back with Hacks and Jacks. I'm Brett Ford. He's Scott Chu. And we're going to talk about his top 150 hitters list. Scott, you made the most recent update on April 17th. And a lot has happened since we've talked about the list. One of the things that happened a couple weeks ago was the Kyren Paris hype train went full steam ahead. Through April 13th, Kyren Paris had a .419 batting average with 5 home runs, 4 stolen bases, 13 runs, and 8 RBI. But I think Kyren Paris' season might be over. 1-for-14 with 9 strikeouts this week. What can we learn from someone like Kyren Paris?
The same thing we should be learning all the time, right? Like, Kyren Paris, it was awesome. And I get why you added him. Now, two things to think about, though. You added him because you don't have time to figure out if it's for real, if you don't want to miss out. I wasn't super concerned about missing out. As a minor leaguer, he wasn't, you know, that exciting, at least not lately. Not since like 2022, he showed like a little bit of a flash. And then since then, maybe a little speed, and the Angels don't run as much as they should. Struck out a ton in the minors. I mean, this is an aggressive hitter who was going to probably get burned by major league pitching, adapting to him. Now, he may bounce back. He may just figure this out. It wouldn't be the very first time that's happened. Maybe for a guy with like a 30 hit tool, it'd be the first time it happened, but it's possible, right? Like, I want every hitter to be great. I would love it if we had a season where there's like 50 dudes that hit 50 home runs. Like, that would just be phenomenal. I do not root against hitters ever. But so, if you so asked you missed
the 90s is what you're saying.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, yeah, there was maybe a little bit of cheating going on, but it was fun. Wasn't it fun? Were you not entertained? You know, watching McGuire and Sosa just like never be sore from all the steroids and then just wrecking the ball. Like, come on, it was fun. But anyway, Kyren Paris, look, a dude that strikes out a ton is going to get on a heater like this. It happens. It happens all the time, right? But it's very cliche, but you don't notice 5 home runs in 3 days quite the same in June as you do in April, because all the other stats are sort of diluting it, right? Again, it's not that you can't pick these guys up. Just don't drop someone that you spent a top 100 pick on, right? Don't drop someone who has like this either a proven track record of success or a very, very strong pedigree, just so you don't miss out on a second baseman who, generally speaking, we don't expect to succeed long-term, right? Again, it's not that they can't. It's just, what's the cost, right? What is the price for picking him up? That's what's important. Just like we talked about earlier in the show, who are you trading for Kyren Paris, right? With the waiver wire. Who's that move for? Again, I get it. You don't want to miss out. But if you picked him up after he hit even 2 of those 4 home runs, you didn't get any of that juice. And all the gains you got from it, you just lost over the last like 7 games, right? It's all gone. You lost all the profit. It's gone, right? It's like you hit a jackpot at the casino and then you just played it all back, right? That's kind of where you're at right now. And that's a difficult thing. As quick as you were to pick him up, a player like this, you got to be quick to let him go. Right. That's the thing. Don't wait all season to try to get that one magical weekend back. Right. Like that X where you had that great, like one time, like, oh yeah, we had this great brief period where everything's good. And then you stay with him for 2 more years and never saw it again. That's a problem. Right. Like, that's not good. You got to be able to move on quickly from these. Kyren Paris, maybe we talk about him again later. Maybe he figures it out and he kind of goes on another run. And I don't mind going in for the second bite of the apple. Right. Because I think he'll be back out there. I think you'll get another shot at this later if you really believe. You got to move on. You got to keep going.
Kyren Paris in my 15-team TGFBI league went for a $358 fab bid last week. So maybe some buyer's remorse on that one, but we'll keep it moving. It wasn't me. It wasn't me. Isaac Paredes keeps climbing in your list, Scott. What are you seeing from Isaac Paredes that you like so much?
Isaac Paredes is my dude. Me and Kyle Bland, we both just love him. And it's because he became, and actually Trevor Huth, also a big fan, because, you know, he's been a Tiger. He was originally a Tigers guy. We traded him for, we're not going to talk about it. It's not that important. Isaac Paredes figured out this single tool. It actually started when he was in Detroit, and Tampa Bay noticed and really wanted it. And it's, he knows how to hit the ball right down the foul line in the air every time. And he is now in one of the best parks for right-handed batters to do that, over in Houston. It is the bet. It's like the best place to do this. He just has to hit the ball 340 feet down the line up in the air. That's it. And he's proven over and over again that he pulls fly balls more than any other hitter in the game. He does it consistently. He's been doing it consistently, right? Batted ball data, it generally, like direction, league-wide is very fluky. That's why Baseball Savant does not use batted ball direction in their expected stats. Pitcher List does use it in our expected stats, and it's because of very high level. It is not predictive across the league. So when you add it in, you're not actually helping the predictive value of expected stats. However, our philosophy on expected stats here at Pitcher List is not about predictiveness. It's about descriptiveness, right? What we care about is how well have they been hitting truly, right? Are their numbers deserved or not? Because X stats just aren't that predictive. We don't really have many stats that are super predictive. Even when we talk about stabilization, like, oh, K rate stabilizes in 50 plate appearances. That just means like when you see a 50, really what that means is like when it becomes meaningful. If you see 50 plate appearances of a certain strikeout rate, that's a meaningful number. But like we call them rolling charts because they roll. They go up and down all the time. They can actually fluctuate quite seriously. It's something to just pay attention to. Now with Isaac Paredes, it's because he's finally doing exactly what we expected him to do. The Astros started out on the road a ton, right? So they were on the road a lot early in the season. They've been playing at home a little bit more. He's now batting second for this team. He's not striking out much. You know, his strikeout rate's just 20%. He's never actually struck out much, Isaac Paredes. So he's a guy who, I know he had this reputation of being like a 205 hitter. Like the first season came out, this dude can hit 240, 250. It's not great, but it's good. His OBP is awesome. He walks, you know, double digits every single year. That OBP is going to be around 340, 350. And him getting, you know, he only hit 19 home runs last year. I definitely think the 2023 version of Isaac Paredes, which hit 31 home runs, that is closer to the truth than what we saw last season where he only hit 19. So I think he can end the season with somewhere between 25 to 28, maybe even 30 if things break just right. He's a lot like Alex Bregman, actually, in terms of what he does with fly balls, how he tries to get away with what he does. That's why Bregman's in a good situation, because he can bounce that ball off the wall. That's why Paredes is a good situation. He can hit that ball right down the line into those Crawford boxes every time he's at home. It's going to be a very nice season for him, and he's moved up the list because it's even, you know, it's even easier to see where it is. And also third base, while there is some depth to it, it's been a tough position to refill, right? So again, this team's been on the road quite a bit. It was nice in their they just did a three-game homestand in LA, and he had a home run in every single one of them. Now, part of that is because the Angels pitching is not very good, but the other part of that is because he's at home, right? So especially when he's at home, he's going to be a very fun guy to watch this year. Isaac Paredes, again, the X stats, especially the ones on Savant, the sliders, they're not going to like him, but that's fine because he doesn't have to hit the ball to do what he's trying to do. Like, he does not need to barrel it to hit those home runs. He'll barrel it sometimes still, but yeah, they're going to tell him that, like, oh yeah, your expected stat, like your expected slugging is only like 370. Because if these balls went to center, they'd be outs every single time. But they don't go to center. They go straight down the line. And that makes them home runs very often. So he's a great player to trade for, because he'll always be underestimated, especially by your league mates that use the sliders, right? That love to just go to Savant and see what the sliders are. I actually said, for the first time, I said this years ago, go get the, that makes Isaac Paredes very easy to acquire, because they think they're holding on to this very, like, oh man, he's been hot. He's just lucky though, right? The X stats tell me this isn't going to stick around, but it is, because you know why. because he always hits the ball in the same direction, and baseball savants, Statcast numbers don't care about that. But you should, because he's done it consistently over and over and over again, year after year after year.
Oh, I can't wait till Daikin Park remains or renames the Crawford boxes to the ESOC boxes out in left field. That'll be fun.
I can't believe they weren't the Bregman boxes. I mean, he just did it all the time.
Well, we move on from Houston. We stay in the AL West, though. We're going to talk about Oakland, the Athletics first baseman, Tyler Soderstrom. He entered the weekend with 9 home runs, a major decrease in his strikeout rate. Do we think this is sustainable? And how has his approach changed at all, or is he just making contact where he wasn't last year?
So that's the thing. Contact itself wasn't really Soderstrom's problem. He wasn't striking out much last year either, right? 24.9% when you factor it all in. It really started to come down about halfway through last season. That's actually when we saw this change. He started out striking out a ton. It really came down, kind of stayed down starting in like June. So that was a good thing. And like the walk rate is climbing back up a bit, which is good. I mean, this is a power hitter who, it's not as though he was like this unheralded prospect, right? We always knew that he had this upside. The hit tool is what needed to kind of come up. And the fact is he can't field anywhere. Like, he can play first base kind of, but he's not a good fielder even there. So he's found this spot. Now, when you say sustainable, do I think him having a 4-digit OPS is sustainable? No, right? Like, that's Aaron Judge, right? He's the guy that gets to do that. But there's nothing. What's important is that there's nothing in this profile that suggests that this is luck-based success, right? What he's doing is legitimate. Now, the one thing I will caution you on is his home run fly ball rate is too high. So right now, Tyler Soderstrom has a home run fly ball rate of 34.6%. Nobody can do that. Like, yeah, I know it's a AAA park, but it's not like a bandbox AAA park. It's a fairly neutral park for AAA. You cannot hit 34.6% of your fly balls as home runs. You cannot do that for very long. Do it for a short time, sure. You will not do it for very long. Nobody has, right? Like, yeah, there's a couple guys that have maybe done it for a while, but like, this is one of the first luck stats that I actually kind of learned about is home run fly ball rate. And again, are there ways to have a good home run fly ball rate? Yes. Usually it's because you don't hit very many fly balls, right? So when you do, they end up being home runs. That's not really what Soderstrom does. He hits plenty of the balls in the air. So what that means is not so much that I think his home run numbers are going to slow down a bunch, actually. What that means is the batting average for Tyler Soderstrom is going to fall quite a bit because he hits a lot of balls in the air. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, when you hit the ball in the air and it doesn't leave the yard, it's probably an out. Right. So that's like the main thing to keep in mind here. And again, just to like keep in perspective, right now, his is 34.9, the number one home run fly ball rate last year, Aaron Judge, 32.2, right? Soderstrom's got a lot of power, but I'm not ready to compare it to Aaron Judge yet. Right. The next highest 28%, that was Shohei Ohtani. All right. Ketel Marte had 25%. That was interesting. Juan Soto, 25%. Kyle Schwarber, 24.7%. Gunnar Henderson, 23.9%. Marcelo Zuna, 23.1%. Like, that home run fly ball rate is going to fall 10% at least. That's actually about where his teammate Brent Rooker is, Teoscar Hernandez. Guys that hit a fair number of fly balls, it's just hard to keep that number, right? 34, it's just too high. It's probably going to fall about between 10 and 15%. And then after that, I think what we see is a guy who still hits plenty of home runs, a guy who I think can certainly end the season. He's already got 9, ending the season like around 30 to 33, I think is very possible for Soderstrom, but it's not going to be hitting 309. It's going to be more like 230, 240.
Well, let's move on from last week's cover boy to this week's cover boy. San Francisco outfielder Jung-Hoo Lee has been tearing the cover off the ball, Scott, and he earned the hitters list graphic cover there for this week. Talk to me about Jung-Hoo Lee and what he's been doing out in the Bay Area.
First of all, thank you, J.R. Kainz. He's been doing these covers for the hitter list pretty much ever since I've been writing it. Does an awesome job with them, finds new themes every year. It's I mean, I think they're just beautiful. You know, and so Jung-Hoo Lee. So what's cool with Jung-Hoo Lee, you know, the home runs are sort of like what kind of got people's attention. He's not going to hit a ton of them. Jung-Hoo Lee just, he doesn't hit the ball in the air that much. He's mostly like a ground ball line drive guy. He's pulling the ball a lot so far this year. I think that will normalize just a little bit. Again, for most players, batted ball direction is fairly fluky, right? Most guys are not Isak Paredes. So I expect that to move in. What's nice to see is, you know, the barrel rate's up, right? The stats are suggesting like not a lot of this is luck. Now the home run fly ball rate for him is 15%. That's technically a sustainable number, but for Jung-Hoo Lee, that'd be higher than it ever was in any year of his career, including in Korea. So that's probably not going to be where it is by the end. Jung-Hoo Lee is not exactly like a, I mean, he's not old, but it, like kind of doubling or tripling your career high, fly ball, like home run fly ball rate. Well, not your career high. His career high was 12%, but for most years it's between like 5 and 7. So he's not going to keep doing that. The home runs I think are going to be sort of spotty, come and go, but he's going to hit for plenty of batting average. He's doing it every single day. He's doing it in the middle of the order for the Giants. I think this was a guy who we worried might get platooned too much, that, you know, he got hurt last year and we didn't see more than singles. That was really the problem. But Jung-Hoo Lee's apparently been able to make this adjustment now. He's almost 250 plate appearances into his Major League Baseball career. I'm very excited about what he's able to do. Again, it's not by the end of the season, it's not going to be sexy, right? But it's going to be tons of contact. He's going to be amazing in points leagues. And I think he can end the season with like 15 home runs, 10 stolen bases, amazing ratios, and a lot more counting stats than I think we predicted coming into the year. I think he can get to over 80 runs, over 80 RBI with the 15 home runs and the 10 steals. It doesn't look like much, but it's, you know, the sum is greater, you know, the sum is worth more than the parts. I forget exactly how that saying goes, but he's very good. That's the point. Jung-Hoo Lee, be excited if you've got him, right? He's really hitting the ball well. He's not going to keep hitting it quite this well, but it's not as though there's like a bunch of stats that are really popping out, except for a little bit on the home run fly ball rate.
Oh, we talked about the guy on the cover graphic 2 weeks ago with Soderstrom. We talked about the guy on last week's cover graphic with Jung-Hoo Lee. And I'm going to make a bold prediction and say this is the guy who's on the cover graphic this coming week. And that's first baseman from the Tampa Bay Rays, Jonathan Aranda. Talk to me about what Aranda's been doing and what you like about it so much.
So he was actually a guy we liked in the preseason. The only problem was playing time, right? And he's getting it. Jonathan Aranda, so he's always been known as a guy who can definitely hit the ball hard. I had a good hit tool. We weren't sure how the home runs would exactly play out. And this isn't his first go around in the majors. So he's got close to a full season in the majors already. 129 career games played, not counting today. With 14 home runs, but obviously four of those coming in 20 games this year. So what he's doing, the plate discipline has been fantastic. He's walking even today, like he didn't get any hits, but he walked twice. He's barreling up the ball a ton, 59.2% hard hit rate. He is locked in. His exit velocity, 95 miles an hour on average right now. Again, these kind of numbers aren't going to stick around. But this isn't the first time he showed us that he has the upside to slug 500. And that's kind of what I'm after here. I think he's absolutely, especially now that he started against each of the last two lefties, he's probably already scooped in your league, but now is the time to just leave him in your lineup and let him go. I think even when he doesn't start, he's going to have a chance to pinch hit. Again, it's all about playing time in Tampa, but they're kind of showing like for now he's got it. Eventually he might lose it if he slumps, whatever. It's going to be a tight rope to walk, but Jonathan Aranda has always shown us that he can hit the ball hard, and now he's doing it just a lot more. And that's what's exciting. And it's just, you know, I'm hoping that it's just an adjustment, right? It's just like he's figured something out. Now, again, it's going to fall. Like it's going to come down a little bit, right? Guys don't only move in one direction. They don't only get better. The real question is going to be in terms of long-term staying power. He should be on your roster right now. You shouldn't wait to pick him up. You probably already needed to pick him up. The question is going to be, just like I asked earlier with Ben Rice, it's going to be the same thing with Tyler Soderstrom. It's going to be the same thing for Spencer Torkelson, who I absolutely love. It's what happens when the first slump comes? How long does it last? How deep does it get? Right? Those are the two questions that we need to be able to answer to then start talking about long-term. Right now we say this guy could be a 30 home run hitter, right? Spencer Torkelson could repeat his 30 home run season. Tyler Soderstrom could be a guy who hits 30 home runs. We know they have that upside. Whether or not they get there is really dependent on how well they manage the day-to-day of Major League Baseball, how well they're able to break slumps, right? It's not just like a quick swing change here and there. A lot of times it's, hey, pitchers are now attacking me in this hole that I have, right? Because you can't cover all of the plate all the time. So how do they react to that? How do they make the adjustments to stay consistent, right? Even Juan Soto has down periods, right? You have to be able to manage that. You have to be able to bounce back up before it gets too bad. Right now, some guys can live always having bad slumps because the peaks are so high. Kyle Schwarber has showed us again and again and again that when he's hot, it's so hot that it's worth the cold spells. That's another way to sort of make it through these. Like, let's say Soderstrom, or more likely Torque, hit this like rough period, but then when he spikes again, it's this good. I can live with that, which is like sort of the thing I didn't mention. How long does the slump last? How deep did it get? And what was the peak like after that? Those three things, that's what we're constantly looking at with these guys. That's what we want to know. I need to know about Aranda, again, for long-term. For short-term, they're showing you the peak. With Kyren Paris, we talked about earlier, the fear was he'll never see this peak again. It's going to fall. It's going to fall really, really hard, and I'm not sure he'll ever make that peak again. I don't know if Torque or Soderstrom or Aranda will ever hit this peak again, but they have the tools to do this again, right? Kyren Paris, I'm not sure he ever did. I mean, it was... He's a super aggressive hitter and was just getting the ball out. Eventually they found a hole. I think they're going to keep finding holes. I think he has a lot of them. These guys don't necessarily, right? Soderstrom, Torque, Aranda, they don't have the Rice. They don't have these huge holes. We just need to see them come back, right? So that's what I'm excited about with all these guys. And that's what we're watching for going forward. You just add them for like, you had to just pick them up when they were hot. But what was nice about these guys is they had real tools that we were excited about before. Right? Soderstrom was a highly rated prospect. Torque was one of the top prospects in baseball. Jonathan Aranda was a top 100 prospect, right? With a very good hit tool. The question was, when can the power show up at the big league level? It's happening right now. So now let's see how that plays out. We are now focused on long-term, not about should you add them. Of course you should. You already needed to 2, 3, 4 weeks ago. But now we're thinking about long-term. That's the way that analysis is going to play out. And when you listen to this podcast again, we're just going to be talking about whether the slump has started and what it, you know, what's it going to look like to come back out of it.
Oh, while we're looking at your list, is there any other hitters that you want to talk about that have had, you know, their names come up, whether it's, you know, risers or fallers the past week or so? Anybody else you want to touch on before we sign off?
Yeah, a guy who's come up a lot at first base. So we've had a lot of these first base breakouts, you know, Michael Busch, Wilmer Flores, Jonathan Aranda, Ben Rice, Pavin Smith, who's doing some interesting things. He's long been a very mediocre player in the big leagues. He's doing some interesting things right now. Worth scooping if you need a stream. Tyler Schroeder, some Spencer Torkelson, all these breakouts, which puts a lot of pressure on the non-breakouts, right? The guys who were supposed to be good and who have not been good. And the main one, there's two, right? One of them who I think you should cut, and the other one I'm trying not to cut. The one you should cut is Spencer Steer. Spencer Steer plays for the Reds. He might have put up some of the silly numbers today. I didn't look. I think he got a piece of the... Yeah, 3 runs and an RBI. Like, that's real cool. He still has a 22 WRC plus on the season. He's been sitting every other day for the last week. That's why he's got to go. It's not... Because Spencer Steer, the thing was, he was never like a great hitter. What he was a full-time hitter in the Coors of the East, who on a team that ran unbelievably aggressive on their base pads. That's how we got to 20 home runs. That's how we got to 25 stolen bases. And they let him bat like third. That's how he got to 92 RBI. He was an opportunity guy, right? Spencer Steer was a player who was put in an awesome opportunity and it made it good for fantasy. That opportunity is gone and the skills are not enough to carry him when he doesn't have that opportunity. You got to let him go. Tristan Casas, on the other hand, is harder. I love the skill set here. He's a patient hitter, sometimes a little too patient, but Casas has a ton of power. This is a guy who legitimately could go 30 home runs, right? I mean, he was a guy that we were excited about in the offseason, and it's been a terrible start for him. And I'm not going to sit here and say, like, I see this thing in the numbers that suggests a breakout is imminent, right? Because that's not really there. right? He's hitting the ball about as hard as he had before, not super often, but he is hitting, you know, the hitting numbers aren't atrocious. They're down a little, but not enough to explain such a dramatic drop. The concern I have is that the Red Sox don't appear interested in letting him hit against lefties anymore. So Cassis has been sitting against all the lefties. That's why, you know, again, you spent a fair amount of draft capital on him. And I think you probably got to wait through the end of the month if at all possible. But if you're in a position where there is a Jonathan Aranda type on the wire, right? I'm probably okay with that, right? But not just for any old guy. It's a very difficult place to be. It's because it's not even like they have other like good first basemen just ready to go, right? Like
you could throw Rafael Devers over there with a first baseman's glove and try, but.
And then who will DH? Like this bench is super thin. Like they just don't have a lot of hitters on the bench, right? Rami Gonzalez, David Hamilton, Rob Ref Snyder. Like you just don't have a lot of options. So I'm curious to see how that's going to play out. But I am worried. I'm worried because he is a very patient hitter. He's shown that it can take a long time for him to break out of these slumps. There's enough raw talent that I want to wait and see, but he is poised for a fall on the list because of the lost playing time. Really, with both these guys, my concern right now isn't just the production, because this is also the thing with Cassis is it's not like we've never seen him be this bad before. We actually have, right? We've seen him be platoon before. We've seen him come out of it. We've seen him be, just not very good before. We saw it really towards the end of last season. He had some times in September that were this bad, maybe worse. So we've seen it. The problem is the lost playing time. Again, he can get it back. We've seen him do it before, which is why I'm willing to hold. But with Steer, even if he has been this bad before, he's lost his opportunity. That's the problem. It's going to be hard to get back. It's a bit crowded over there. They don't really need him. So especially with Austin Hayes coming off, you know, hitting really well, he's a decent stream in the outfield. If you need one, especially in like four or five outfielder leagues, look at Austin Hayes. He's a really streaky, aggressive hitter. I mostly prefer him at home, but hey, streaky hitters get hot sometimes, right? Ride the wave and then drop him when he gets cold. So yeah, I get it why you're frustrated with Tristan Cassis. I'd ask you to wait just a little bit, just a little, not long. Give it like one more week. Let's see what happens.
Beautiful. Unless you have any parting words of advice, that's going to wrap us up for today.
Just remember the replacement level. Figure if you get a feel for what the replacement level of hitter is in your league and pitchers, right? You get a feel for what the replacement level is. Generally, what quality of guy is always going to be around. That's really going to help you make a lot of moves, right? You're not going to lose so much sleep over that last outfield spot, right? Because when you know that there's players of that kind of caliber always available, just let it fly, right? Look at matchups, let it fly. That would be the advice I'd give you. If you get nothing else out of this, rolling charts as always, find the replacement level.
Excellent. Thank you, Scott. For Hacks and Jacks, that was Scott Chu, certainly way above replacement level as far as hitting analysis goes. Make sure to check out his top 150 hitters list on Pitcher List every single week. And check out the PL Pro, all the in-season tools of PL Plus and PL Pro. There's some really great stuff there. If you haven't checked it out, make sure you do. And good luck with everything in the rest of your leagues this week. For Scott Chu, I'm Brett Ford, signing off for Hacks and Jacks. We'll be back next weekend. Have a good one.